Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, February 26, 2015. I'm Andy Vasoyan. Four USC students were hit by a sedan around noon today, walking near the Jefferson and McClintock intersection. Police and USC Department of Public Safety confirmed that a 23-year-old woman was critically injured after the car slammed a traffic pole to the ground and ended up on the sidewalk. The three other students were treated at the scene and released. The driver was another 23-year-old woman, but it was unclear if she's a USC student. She was taken to a hospital for an undisclosed medical emergency, and her condition is unknown. USC Gate 5 is closed. Police are blocking vehicle and pedestrian traffic in the area because of the fallen traffic pole. Two people were killed and a third seriously injured by a hit-and-run driver in Chatsworth early this morning. Denise Folks works near the site of the accident.
It's going to be depressing all day just to know somebody got killed right here on this street.
The Los Angeles Police Department says the accident might have happened during a street race when one car lost control and barreled into the crowd. One spectator was killed immediately and another died at the hospital. The third victim is expected to survive. A short time from now, police are expected to release a photo. Prosecutors say that for now, they won't charge the pickup truck driver who was hit by a Metrolink train in Oxnard. Officials say they first want to complete a full and thorough investigation. The Ventura County District Attorney did say the arrest of Jose Sanchez Ramirez by Oxnard police was appropriate and lawful. The family of a transgender woman who was murdered in South LA joined police detectives this morning to hear news of a break in the case. Tina Gutierrez went to the 77th Street Station, where detectives announced the arrest of a suspect.
The family of murder victim DeShonda Sanchez can finally sleep in peace. After months of investigating, detectives arrested James Spells yesterday on first-degree murder charges. The victim's twin, DeShonda Bradley, was grateful for the news.
We went through hell, cried, everybody heartbroken. When they finally got the call yesterday, it was all breathtaking.
Sanchez was a 21-year-old transgender woman. On the night of December 3rd, she dialed 911, calling for help, saying a man had robbed and assaulted her. Police say she tried to run away and hide in a nearby home when the suspect returned and shot her multiple times.
Because of the last word of this innocent victim, we were able to apprehend a vicious killer.
That was LAPD commanding officer Peter Whittingham. Family members like sister Diana Williams expressed their thanks and final words to Sanchez.
What happened to you was not right. You didn't deserve that. You didn't live that life.
Police say the suspect, James Spells, was a former gang member in South LA, out on parole for robbery. It's still unclear if the murder will be considered a hate crime. Spells is also a suspect involved in a human trafficking case. Officer Whittingham connected him to the sexual assault and forced prostitution of an 11-year-old girl.
We strongly believe that they may be other victims.
It's up to the district attorney to seek additional charges for Spells. Tina Gutierrez, Annenberg Radio News.
Commemorating the 50th anniversary of the racially charged Watts riots, Los Angeles residents rallied today, calling for neighborhood improvement and better representation in South LA. Leah Harari has the story.
Fix our streets! Fix our streets! Fix our streets!
Now! The otherwise average intersection of 92nd and Bandera Street in South LA today was transformed as residents rallied for a stoplight at the corner, a stoplight they've wanted since 2001. Residents say the same racial misrepresentation in LA that sparked the violent 1965 Watts riots still exists today. City sanitation worker Samboya Wright feels his neighborhood takes a backseat to west side areas like Brentwood.
I live in South Los Angeles, and many times people in South Los Angeles are overlooked.
Longtime resident Katie Smith supports that notion, saying she hasn't seen much, if any, change over the years.
If you go up and down the streets, you'll see they nasty, the alleys are just cluttered with filth and stuff, and there's no need for this to happen like that.
Residents are asking the city to install a stoplight to protect the elderly who live in nearby senior housing and children who attend the 92nd Street Elementary School. Leah Harari, Annenberg Radio News.
Fix our streets! Fix our streets!
A field poll released today shows that an increasing number of California voters are in favor of mandatory water rations. Several residents in Van Nuys got a head start on their conservation. Jerry Barnes has more on the story.
Six homeowners in Van Nuys had their lines ripped up and replaced with drought-resistant lines free of charge. Climatologist Bill Patzert of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory visited the newly replaced lines. He urged homeowners around Los Angeles to follow suit in preparation for a mega drought that could last decades. Patzert warned that winter has become the new spring. He advised LA homeowners to take advantage of precipitation and replace their lines in the winter months. LADWP offers a rebate for homeowners who replace their lines. Jerry Barnes, Annenberg Radio News.
LA teachers are rallying in Grant Park today to demand increased wages and better classroom conditions. Reporter Emily Thornburg is at the rally. What's the scene like there, Emily?
Hi, Annie. Yeah, it's very packed. All of the teachers are in red in support of the union, the United Teachers Los Angeles Union, and they're down here with their signs, and they're really amped up right now.
Okay, and what do they hope to accomplish with their rally?
You know, they're really hoping. I've heard a lot of stories from the teachers just about lack of cleanliness in their classrooms, lack of nurses. So they're just really hoping to get a better contract with LAUSD, also with their increased wages. So they're just really trying to look for some compromise after the deadlock in their contract agreements last week with the district.
All right. Emily Thornburg, thank you.
Thank you.
The Shoah Foundation is partnering with the Center for Initiatives in Jewish Education to bring a new form of Holocaust education to students. Abby Flaxer reports. And we seem to be having some technical difficulties here. We will bring you that story when we can. This morning at LAX, a Boy Scout took flight and became an Eagle. An Eagle Scout, that is. Victor Figueroa was with Tyler Fisher for that momentous occasion.
In case you don't know, that was the call of a red-tailed hawk. It's one of the birds that LAX hopes to prevent from being caught in airplane engines. Wildlife biologist for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Todd Pitlick, worked with LAX to keep these birds out of harm's way, as well as save airlines a pretty penny.
If they get sucked into an engine, it could cause significant damage to the fan blades. We've had aircraft that have lost all the fan blades in one engine. You're looking at $250,000 just to replace the blades.
The airport has an agreement with the Boy Scouts. A scout can earn his Eagle badge by supervising a group to assemble a goshawk trap. New Eagle Scout Tyler Fisher says building the bird-catching device was tough.
I was really pushed and pushed, and there was points where I didn't really want to continue on, and I just got really stressed and tired, and I'm just really relieved that I'm done with everything and like got my Eagle.
Fisher built 4 goshawk traps overall, and was the third scout in about a year to earn his Eagle badge by building the contraption. Victor Figueroa, Annenberg Radio News.
We are sad to report that a cherished member of the journalism community passed away on Tuesday. Rania Niftos honors her memory.
Dori Maynard was a journalist who devoted her life's work to how the diverse American population is represented in the media. Throughout her career, she strongly supported minority groups whose voices often go unheard in the news and public discussion.
I think she just was a remarkable advocate for a better democratic society, one that we can all be proud of.
That was Mark Trahant, the board chairman of the Robert C. Maynard Institute for Journalism Education, a nonprofit organization founded by and named after Maynard's father. Dori Maynard assumed the leadership of the Oakland-based institute in 2001, shortly after her father died in 1993. It encourages equality in the media through increased coverage and training programs across various platforms. Trahant believes that Maynard's determined presence allowed for a great impact on American journalism.
I think she was really smart in the way she talked about diversity in journalism as an issue of accuracy. So it took it away from the right thing to do and just said, if you want to be an accurate journalist, this is something you've got to do. And that changed the conversation in a very positive way.
Maynard's influence and legacy is likely to carry on for years to come. Rania Niftos, Annenberg Radio News.
For almost 25 years, Kenneth Turan has reviewed films for the Los Angeles Times. He's also well known to public radio listeners for his film reviews on NPR's Morning Edition. Maya Williams recently sat down with Turan to talk about the Oscars, what's missing from Hollywood since its golden age, and his new book, Not to be Missed, 54 Favorites from a Lifetime of Film.
So I'll just go ahead and start with talking about the Oscars. Yeah. So I'm interested in the opening number, the Neil Patrick Harris musical. He's pretty much extolling the history of movie magic. And then Jack Black interrupts him with his whole lament on the state of the industry. Did you have a reaction to that?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, everybody knows that what Jack Black said is complete truth. The movies have gone in a lot of different directions, and the studios, they have abandoned the adult audience. And the reason we don't have those kind of films that resonate with us the way they used to was that the studios only make them sporadically. Mm-hmm. They make them to be candidates for the Oscars. It's not their bread and butter anymore. Their bread and butter, as you know, as everyone knows, and as Jack Black knows, is, you know, sequels, comic book movies, toy movies. That's what Hollywood does. And at the Oscar time, they try and pretend they do something else.
Your recent book, Not to Be Missed, where you talk about the 54 films that have affected you most, you mentioned that being a film critic these days is like crawling through the desert in search of an oasis. Has it always felt that way?
Always, as a film critic, I think you're going to see every film is not going to be good, even in the golden age of Hollywood, where they made a lot of films that are still classics. But it's just the batting average was higher because they were aiming at that adult audience more than they are today. You have to really love film to do this job because a lot of what you see is not very good.
So as a film critic, you're also commenting on culture just by nature. You know, there's such a huge outcry for more diversity in the industry. Do you think it's on the artistic side of it, it's an issue, or the institution of Hollywood as a business?
You know, that's an interesting question. It's a risk-aversive business at its core. And I think anything different than what they've always done is viewed as a risk. And risk is something that's instinctively avoided. So, you know, obviously from a commercial point of view, these different audiences would go to the movies and spend money. I mean, it's not really, doesn't really make sense from an economic point of view. All over the world, everyone wants to see themselves on the screen, as they should. And when they see themselves on the screen, they go. You know, so if Hollywood was a sane business, they would be putting everyone on screen because it's good business. But they just, they haven't done it, and they don't know how to do things they haven't done for decades.
But it seems like television, on the other hand, is incorporating so much diversity with shows like Black-ish and Fresh Off the Boat. Do you have an idea as to why it might be that film hasn't embraced that?
I mean, one reason it exists is that movies left this big gap. You know, there's an adult audience that's interested in stuff like this. There's a diverse audience that's interested in diversity. They can't find it in the movies. They want to watch stuff. So television said, we can fill this gap. Also, it comes into your house. A movie executive once said to me that I'm not going to make movies anymore where you have to dynamite people off their sofas to get them into the theaters. So if something seems a little risky, a little different, they're not going to take the chance. But to turn the knob for something a little risky, a little different, that they'll do.
And then you also, in the beginning of your book, quote Ingmar Bergman about how film penetrates ordinary consciousness.
Yeah. Really, film is as powerful a communicative device as we have. It can do enormous things. And we in this country use it to kind of sell toys. So I can just be frustrated. And I can, you know, try and get other people frustrated too in hopes that people will listen.
To try to end on an optimistic, forward-looking note. So in hopes that maybe films can at some point elevate again to that level of piercing through the ordinary consciousness, what filmmakers are you excited to see what's coming from them next?
You know, they're all filmmakers. The filmmakers I think of are filmmakers who use genre. Christopher Nolan started with really, he was a classic independent filmmaker. He now makes the biggest budget films imaginable, but they always have a real independent quirk to them. They're very personal. The man who made Footnote, Joseph Sadar, who's an Israeli filmmaker, makes a series of very interesting films about the situation in Israel. There are people out there. It's not like there's nothing out there. There are wonderful films out there. It's hard to get a mass audience to see them. They just are resistant. Mm-hmm. But you just, you know, one reason I wrote that book is that I want to shake people and say, no, they're good films, they're interesting films, they're worthwhile films. You'll like these films. Mm-hmm. They'll mean something to you. It's sad, but that's what's happening. And but what we can do is patronize the films. So if they make money, they will make more of them. If they don't make money, they'll make less of them. It's just that simple.
So money talks.
In Hollywood, for sure.
That was LA Times film critic Kenneth Turan. And that's it for this Thursday. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Andy Vassoyan.